Have you ever felt the rush of just climbing the career ladder? You know what I'm talking about. Like the glory of just grabbing step by step leading up to success, or just like the thrill of soaring higher than you ever thought you could soar before. When I was 15, I knew I was a working man. I knew that it was deep down inside of me, and I saw myself just entering into the work field and just feeling the joys of climbing the career ladder. And I learned how to play the game, and I learned how to play it well when I was young. So when I was 15, I knew that I wanted to work, but I didn't know where to work because where I grew up in Stanwood, Washington, not a lot of people worked when they were 15, but one of my friends who was 15 worked, so I talked to him. I said, how can you get me a job? He said, let me talk to my boss. He talked to his boss. He came back to me and he said, Michael, I got you a job. I said, perfect. Run, like step one of climbing the career ladder. So I was there, my first job. I was standing on the side of the road holding a sign. The sign said furniture sale. It was pointing that way. It was the best job I ever had at that point. It was amazing. I felt alive standing there. I felt like I was the best sign holder out there until I found another guy holding a different furniture sale sign, and he was spinning it, and I thought, I can do that. So I got the furniture sale sign. I spun it, hit my eye, had to go to the doctor, stop spinning it. New strategy. I started dancing with the sign. Actually. And so from sunrise to sunset, I was dancing with that sign. I was the best sign dancer out there. I loved it. But then I started to get a little cold. In the mornings, it got a little chilly. At night, it got a little chilly. And I thought, man, here I am dancing with this sign when people are working inside. So I went to another friend. I was 16 at that time. He was working inside, and I said, hey, can you get me a job? He said, of course I can. Let me talk to my boss. Got me a job, and I was inside working as a dishwasher at a retirement home. Best job I ever had at that point. I was washing dishes. I loved it. I was climbing the career ladder. But then, after scrubbing and scrubbing, when I was scrubbing just like the spaghetti sauce stain off of a big industrial-sized pan, I looked at the wait staff, and I said, I want to do that. They're not scrubbing pans. So I went to my manager and I said, hey, I see how they're blending the corn and the beef and serving it to these senior citizens through a straw. I can do way better than they could. And they're like, all right, prove it. So I climbed another rung in the ladder. I was a waiter. I didn't get tips at that retirement center, but the tip that I got was climbing the ladder. And I served that blended corn and beef. I served decaf coffee morning, noon, and night. It was amazing. It was great. I was having the time of my life until I realized that people in my high school, when they've made it in a career in high school, they worked at Little Caesars. So I didn't know anyone who worked at Little Caesars, though. None of my friends did, so I did it the old-fashioned way. I got a resume. I submitted it. 2 interviews. Nailed it. I was working the best job that I had ever worked before, making pizza at Little Caesars. I loved it. Making those $5 hot and ready pizzas. It was amazing. I was on top of the world climbing the ladder until my boss one day said, Michael, I got to talk to you in my office. So I said, okay, let's go. Went into the office. The smell of stale pizza dough wafting from our clothes, pizza sauce all over her apron. I had just flour and pizza dough all over my apron. She said, Michael, I want to give you a promotion. And I said, Denise, I'm not surprised. I have been climbing the ladder, Denise. And she's like, I know your journey. I know where you've come from, and I know where you've gotten to. And Michael, there is this promotion that only you can do. I said, tell me what it is. I'm ready. And so she bent down, and she pulled out a sign. And she said, Michael, I want you to stand in that corner, and I want you to hold this sign. And I want you to point people to Little Caesars. And my heart sunk. I felt like I fell down the ladder that I was climbing. And I said, okay, I'll do it. That's fine. I got to work. I got to make a living. So she gave me this shirt. I went into the bathroom. I put the shirt on, and I stared at the mirror as my heart was sinking. And I read the 3 words, hot and ready. So there I was, standing on the street corner, with a shirt that said hot and ready. I hit rock bottom. And I was so sad, but I thought, I can do this. I can do this. And then people started driving by. They were laughing at me. They were honking their horn. And I just felt that I definitely hit rock bottom. And I prayed Ecclesiastes 1 to Jesus. I said, meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors which they toil under the sun? What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. All that ladder climbing felt meaningless. There's another story about a young guy. It's a story in the Bible, though, about a guy named Joseph. And Joseph was set up for this bright future. He could have climbed this ladder of success, of calling, but things didn't turn out how Joseph thought it would. Genesis 37, it starts out, Joseph is the son of Israel, or Jacob. God gave him the name Israel. There was many sons. Joseph was one of the youngest sons. But here's the thing, when Israel had Joseph, he was very old. So Joseph was one of Israel's favorite sons. So he gave him this coat that none of his other brothers had. It was this multicolored coat. Different colors all over it. And the thing back then was multicolored coats. You had to get this expensive dye to make it, so it was an expensive coat. And Joseph just walked around like he knew everything. He walked around with pride. He had made it, and he didn't even have to do anything. And Joseph had certain gifts. Joseph had gifts of leadership. Joseph is the kind of guy that can call people around him, and they'll circle up and listen to him. Joseph was the kind of guy that could interpret dreams. So one day, Joseph called his brothers around. He said, brothers, come here, come here. And they're like, what, Joseph? Wearing his coat, he gathered them around and said, brothers, I just had a dream. They said, what dream, Joseph? He said, one day, all of you will bow down to me. And they're like, what? You punk, what did you just say? They were mad at him. I mean, he was his father's favorite. He had an expensive coat, so they left. They were just upset at Joseph. A couple days later, Joseph calls him back. Brothers, brothers, I have another dream and another interpretation. Angry, they walked over to Joseph, and Joseph gathered them around, and he said, well, it's kind of like the same one. One day you guys are going to bow down to me. And they had it. They were so upset with Joseph, they left. They went to work out in the fields. And then Joseph, he didn't really care. So a few days later, Joseph goes out to find his brothers. His dad had sent him, and his brothers saw Joseph with his multicolored coat coming towards them, and they burned with rage. So they thought, hey, here's this hole, this cistern. It's empty. There's no water in it. When he comes, let's throw him in it, and let's kill him. Let's get a wild animal there. But one of his brothers, Reuben, said, no, we can't do that. We can't kill our brother. Joseph came, they grabbed him, they ripped his coat off of him, they threw him down really forcefully into this hole, and then Judah, another brother, said, hey, let's not kill him. There's this band of Ishmaelites coming. Let's sell him. Let's make a little profit. So the Ishmaelites came, they pulled Joseph out of the hole and sold him, got a couple bucks in their pocket, and the Ishmaelites left with Joseph. And the brothers took his robe, they killed a goat, they tore the robe, they put blood on it, and they went to the father, Israel, your son Joseph, our brother, is dead. A wild animal killed them. Israel wept. And then Joseph, while he was walking, sold into slavery, wept. His life, which was had order, which was filled with joy, this calling that he had, was thrown away, and he was in the season of disorder. He was going, he was sold as a slave, and he went to Egypt, and he was sold into being working for Potiphar. Potiphar was one of Pharaoh's highest officials, and Joseph was there working. And Joseph, in that darkness, being a slave, he said, God, I don't know why this has happened to me, but I trust you. I'm going to follow you. And God was with him in that moment. And God's favor, it says, was on Joseph. And in fact, on Potiphar's whole household. Anything that Potiphar did was blessed because Joseph was there and God's favor was on him. And then one day, Potiphar's wife, she made this lie up about Joseph and said, Joseph tried to rape me, seize him. So they grabbed him. They threw him into a deeper hole. It was a prison. It was dark. Joseph stayed in that dark prison for years and years. He was in disorder, in darkness, but in the darkness he said, God, I trust you. I don't know why this is happening, but I trust that you're with me. And God had favor on him. In fact, everything that Joseph did in that prison, there was favor. And the prison guards, they gave a lot of responsibility up to Joseph. They trusted him. And everything that Joseph did had favor. Then one day, this cupbearer, this baker, was thrown into prison. They said, Joseph, I had a dream. Can you interpret it? And Joseph had grown. He said, I can't interpret dreams. But God has given me a gift where he can interpret dreams through me. So he interpreted their dreams. And they left. Years later, Joseph, still in the darkness of the prison, Pharaoh has a dream. No one can answer his dream. He said, I'm going to kill all of you if someone can interpret my dream. Cupbearer remembers Joseph, gets Joseph. Pharaoh says, interpret my dream. He says, I can't interpret dreams, but God can through me. That's a gift he gave me. He interpreted the Pharaoh's dreams. And what the dream was that there was going to be a large famine. And so Pharaoh appointed Joseph, the second in command of all of Egypt, to come up with this strategy of collecting and distributing grain for the 7 years of this famine. And later his brothers and his fathers, the story ends by Joseph providing for them. Providing for his father, providing for his brothers. Joseph's story went from order, calling, and then the order was thrown away and he was in the darkness of disorder. And then God brought him into the stage of reorder. That was his calling journey. And when it comes to how we think about calling, young adults, in particular, college students, young professionals, we deeply wrestle with the all too familiar question, what is the will of God for my life? What is God's will for calling in my life? And with this, we will ask ourselves questions like, what would happen if I miss my calling? What would happen if I get my calling wrong? Will God be angry with me? And what if I can never figure out what my calling is? Catholic theologian Richard Rohr discusses a model of human and spiritual development known as order, disorder, and reorder. And with this model, it not only helps us understand what our journey of God is like, but it can also act like a guide as we navigate the often messy journey of discerning our calling. And in this model, Rohr says that most people start in order. And order begins with almost entirely of this tribal thinking, which starts with this egocentric need for order and self. We create this sense of order by how those in our community or our tribe act. For example, if you grew up in a Christian home, the sense of order that was instilled in you was probably centered on Christian values. And in the same way, if you grew up in a household that promoted higher education, leading to a pathway of business as career with the goal of wealth and provision, you probably tried to get into the best school. You probably tried to snag the best internship. You probably wanted and tried to and perhaps did land this lucrative job. That's order. Now, disorder is when what we hold in order comes into either question or crashing down. I mean, maybe we struggle to trust in the Bible like we were raised to because there seemed to be just a ton of questions that we don't feel the Bible's answering. Or there are things written down in the Bible that just confuse us, that don't make sense to us. And so this idea of growing up as a Christian in theology becomes disordered to us. And maybe we didn't get into the school we wanted to. Or we found that the school that we did get into is just slowly killing us. Or we didn't land the internship or the job that we wanted to, or we needed to, or we quit, or we got fired. That's disorder. Now, reorder. Rohr says that only a few who let wisdom guide them with faith and hope get into the area of reorder. To Rohr, reorder is kind of a sort of enlightenment. It's navigating from order to disorder, then arriving at this new sense of order, a different order than what you initially began with. And figures in the Bible like Abraham, Sarah, Moses, David, many of the prophets, Job, Mary Magdalene, even Paul went from the sense of order, experienced disorder, but then resurfaced with reorder. Now, what I want to talk about today are these three phases, order, disorder, and reorder, and how they relate to Joseph and how they actually relate to us in this area of calling. Because when we first think about calling, it's usually in the context of order. And when we want to figure out what our calling is, we typically try to build or find this solid blueprint that will guide us. And typically the blueprints are in three different areas. First is a personal blueprint. What do I want to do? I have to find the calling for my life because I matter and I call the shots. And the second one is community. What do our communities want for our lives? Our tribes, our schools, our parents, society. What's the blueprint that they want us to do? And the third one, which is perhaps the most confusing and can be the hardest to interpret, is what does God want for us? How do I find that blueprint, that calling that God has placed for my life? And whichever blueprint we follow, and most often it's a different varying mixture of all three of them, we find that we pour our energy into living out these blueprints. But often, like Joseph, when we find and when we follow our blueprint, it can slowly unravel. And when this happened to him, order around Joseph's calling turned into disorder. I mean, you can say that there was a calling on Joseph's life. I mean, he interpreted dreams. He was a leader, and he lived in a wealthy family. He had a bright future. I mean, Joseph just knew that his life would be one where he would have a plot of land, where his cattle would grow, he'd get married, and he would make a lot of money, and he was a gifted leader, so he was ready for life. He was ready for that. But then that was taken away from him. He was sold into slavery, disorder. He was thrown into prison, disorder. He lived in the darkness of the prison for years, disorder. And similarly, we can have a sense of order when we cleave unto an idea of a great calling in our lives, a blueprint calling given to us by God or our community or what we find individually. But typically, we can find that the order of calling, the blueprint that we have decided to follow, is thrown into disorder. School isn't what you thought it was going to be. It's tough. Disorder. I'm in my career, and it's not what I thought it would be. Or I'm fired, or I'm looking for a new job. When will this end? Disorder. And this can lead us to asking questions of why. I mean, why do bad things happen to good people? Why can't we find and follow a blueprint mentality for calling? Why can't it be easy? And isn't the Bible just this big, huge blueprint for our lives? And if we look at the Bible as a blueprint to treasure hunt specific individual calling, we'll soon realize that this blueprint, in it, there's more mystery than certainty. That there's often disorder and trials before comfort and ease. And in this period of disorder, we can even begin to question, where is God at? Is God even with me anymore? Has God left me? There's another story later in the Bible with this other guy who can interpret dreams. He had friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were also living away from their people. They were taken into exile. They were not where they wanted to be, but they had gifts. They had calling. They were leaders. And the king at that time, Nebuchadnezzar, saw those gifts and saw that calling of leadership and rose them up to being ambassadors. They were men of God who were leaders in the land of Babylon. And then one day, Nebuchadnezzar, he got all this gold and made like a 90-foot tall idol. And he said, when you hear the music, people of Babylon, you are to bow down and worship this idol. So the idol was put up, music came down, everyone bowed, but not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because they said they will only bow down to Yahweh. Nebuchadnezzar heard about it. He burned with anger. So he got this furnace that he would throw people in to burn Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was so mad that he put so much wood in there that it burned 7 times hotter than it normally would. He had Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego bonded, and he told servants to throw them in. So they went and they threw them in, but the fire was so hot that they died. The soldiers died, and they were thrown into the furnace, and Nebuchadnezzar looked in there just to watch them burn. But to his surprise, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were in the furnace, but they were walking. They weren't burning. Their bondages, what was tying them down was not tying them down anymore. And they were walking around, and Nebuchadnezzar looked in and he saw a fourth person with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Nebuchadnezzar said, I threw 3 people in there. Now there's 4. And the fourth person looks like the son of gods. Now, I don't know where you're at with this idea of calling. I don't know if you feel like everything is going great with school, with your career, if you feel like there's so much order in your life. I don't know if you feel like you've been pursuing this idea of calling, but you feel like everything in your life is slowly unraveling. I don't know if you feel like you've been thrown into the darkness like Joseph. But from someone who's lived in the darkness, I do know that darkness does not have to overwhelm you. Because God is with you. Jesus, the light of the world, is with you. And in Revelation 21:5, John witnessed in a prophetic vision the kingdom of heaven colliding with the kingdom of earth, the light of the kingdom of heaven invading the darkness of the kingdom of earth, creating the new reality. And John witnessed Jesus saying to all, "Behold, I am making all things new." Now, I don't know how long you've been following God. I don't know if you even know what following God is or if you even want to. I don't know if you've truly been trying to make the best out of your life. I don't know if you're a dishwasher. I don't know if you're a waiter. I don't know if you're holding a sign at the edge of the street and you feel like everything is meaningless. I don't know if you're going to school. I don't know if you're struggling at work, questioning your career choice, whether you got fired or you feel like every day you're in the fire. But what I do know is that in the flames, Jesus is with you. And he's not going to let the fire destroy you. And just like he spoke to John, he's speaking to you. Behold, I am making all things new. Joseph realized that in the darkness of disorder, he was not alone, that God was with him, and that in the darkness, God was making all things new. And his disorder slowly shifted to reorder. In her book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, Barbara Brown Taylor said, "I have learned things in the dark that I could never have learned in the light. Things that have saved my life over and over again. So that there is really one logical conclusion. I need darkness as much as I need light." She goes on to say, "New life starts in the dark. Whether it's a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, it starts in the dark." And it was in the darkness of prison, of disorder, that God began to grow the gifts that Joseph would later use to save everyone that he knew. I mean, Joseph had gifts that God uniquely gave him to interpret dreams, to become a leader. What are your gifts? So I remember when I was a freshman in high school, And I was just kind of in the stage of discovering what my gifts were. I knew I had some gifts. I definitely knew I didn't have other gifts. One was singing. I just knew I couldn't sing. But our school was kind of a big, like, musical school, which was kind of weird but kind of cool. And I'm like, okay, there's auditions for this musical. No way I'm going to do that. But this girl that I thought was really cute was auditioning for the school. So I became a student of singing. I found out what that song was that I had to audition, and I practiced that puppy day and night. I was waking up singing that song. I was in the shower singing that song. I was singing that song when I went to bed. People were like, Michael, stop singing that song. So then I went to auditions, and I was standing there, ton of people there, because again, there was like a really big musical school, which was kind of cool. But I sang the audition song, and then it was silence. And I thought, oh gosh, I am a terrible singer, and they're all really going to laugh at me. And then everyone rushed me. And it was kind of weird, and like, Michael, you have a gift. You can sing. I'm like, I can? They're like, you need to join choir. I said, okay, choir nerds, hold up. Not yet. I came here for one reason. So then, as I look back, I didn't get the job, I didn't get the part, I didn't get the girl, but I did get into choir, which I don't know what to think about that, but it sounded a little depressing. But I also ended up getting really serious about this gift, because I found that I love to communicate to people through song. I found that I grew in that, and I love that. And as I pursued this gift, I went on this journey to discover that deep down inside, communication was a gift. And I began to realize that I just wanted to communicate the truth, whether it was through song or wasn't through song. And I began to call the gift of communication out of me. Now, there's a difference between being called and calling out your gifts. Blueprint calling is an outside-in approach, while gifted calling is an inside-out approach. And as we begin to bring our gifts out, we'll find that we have an important decision to make. We can use our gifts to build our own kingdom, or we can use our gifts to build God's kingdom. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to shift, or that doesn't mean that we have to shift what we do for work, but why we work. In the stage of order, Joseph used his gifts for selfish reasons. I mean, he told his family on two accounts that they would bow down to him. And then Joseph went into the season of disorder. And here he used his gifts again, both for the baker and the cupbearer, and then for Pharaoh. And in the darkness of disorder, his what didn't change, but his why slowly did. God had loved him in the darkness. So he would use his gifts to show that same love to others. And that's when the great reorder happened, a reorder of why, which is what most reorders were, most reorders are. Joseph was once more able to use his gifts for his family, but this time it was to lift God up and lift his family up. Joseph used his gifts of dream interpretation and leadership to save Egypt and the surrounding lands of just this severe famine, not salmon, because that's weird. And he saved his family, and for that, they actually ended up bowing to him. Now, I want to suggest that there is no such thing as a formal blueprint calling to your life, at least not in the way that we typically approach it. But most of us, we still feel this burden to discover what the will of God is for our lives around calling. And we can still end up becoming frustrated because the blueprint that we followed left us burning in the darkness of disorder, left us hollow and empty. Because maybe if we find the blueprint, we'll think this. Maybe if we find our calling, we'll please God like we pleased our parents, or like we pleased our community or our society with all of our achievements, or like we pleased ourselves when we witnessed all that we could accomplish. But that mindset does not work with God, because God is already pleased with you. Before you did anything, before you do anything, Romans 5:8 says, God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. In the middle of failure, the opposite of achievement, God demonstrated his love for us. That's the gift of God's grace that he called up through his son. He's pleased with us because we are his, not because of what we can do. Friends, there's freedom in Jesus. And maybe we don't need to worry about missing our calling because Jesus has called us fully loved, fully forgiven. That's the blueprint of the Bible. That's the blueprint of Jesus' heart. And we're invited to live that out by discovering and calling out our gifts and by using them to serve others, to love God by using the gifts that he gave you to love others. Now, I want to close by asking a few questions and then proposing a challenge. What are your gifts? What would it take for you to call your gifts out? And the challenge is to find a way this week to use them to serve God and others, regardless of the school you're in or regardless of the career you're in, because the world does not need more vocational pastors. The world needs more pastors in their vocation. And that's you. That's us. And when you navigate from order to disorder to reorder in how you think about calling or any other part of your spiritual development to cling to Jesus in the darkness, in the fire, and to realize that the blueprint of your calling is to be loved and to love. And then to take a deep breath and choose freedom, which is a gift God has given to any that would follow. But unfortunately, freedom is a gift that most of his followers leave unwrapped. He's called us love. He's called us loved. Let's let that calling come out. Let's pray. Jesus, I am just so thankful that we serve a God who's alive. I'm so thankful that we serve a God that has called us by his love. I'm so thankful that we serve a God that regardless of what we do, before we have done anything right or wrong, you love us. And you say, my child, you're loved. There's forgiveness. There's grace. I've called you to know the fullness of my love. And whether you're in the darkness, whether you feel like you're burning on fire on your situations, that fire will not touch you because I am with you. And Jesus, I just pray that that reality of who you are and your love with us will be our reality, that we just don't do church, that we just don't come here as young adults to find community that isn't centered in you, but that we can start a movement by your spirit. A movement where we know that you are calling us higher. You are calling us deeper into your love. Help us hear that calling. Whatever's in our ears that could be blocking it, help it just fall out during this worship, God. And help us be open to hearing what you want to say to us in the darkness.